All right, we are here. Welcome, welcome. All right. We're going to talk about managing times of personal crisis. Now, crisis comes along and disturbs the order that you attempt to manage your life with. But you see, we must go further back towards source. You came into this life in chaos. Chaos is the realm of complete and total possibility. It has perhaps threads of intention that align, perhaps, and organize those possibilities to bring them into probabilities. But overall, chaos is a place of the unknown, a place of total silence, a place where you can connect completely and totally to the divine. And when you first were born, when you first came in, you were still connected. You were connected. You're floating in that chaos, in that soup, in that just energy of nothing, no thing. And you came into form, which is a thing. You came into form, you came into thoughts and ideas and feelings. You began to adopt identification to yourself. You learned your name. You learned how to respond to your body's signals for hunger, to need love. You were in the chaos. And out of that, you utilized your parents, family members, ideas, thoughts, to construct a sense of order, to construct a sense of structure to the life that was seemingly stable, seemingly grounding, that had a certain alignment of importance in it. You knew that feeding yourself as an infant, that was very important. You had got to have food. You knew that you had to have love. You had to have shelter. You had to have some kind of nurturing to survive. And you also saw that by your responses, by your actions, the responses of your caretakers, and you learned how to gauge those responses, to deliberately learn how to manipulate those responses. You knew how to cry just so that it would drive your mother nuts. And so finally, yes, she'd have to take care of you, just in case she didn't right away. All these kinds of things, you learned how to create order in the chaos, a sense of continuity in your life, a sense of priority in your life. This made sense to you. This gave you a sense of security, a sense of the familiar. Now, every night when you go to sleep, even now, you drop all of it off and go into the chaos. In the morning when you wake up, you remember your name, you remember your priorities, you remember your sense of order. A lot of people think, well, order is how you organize things. You put it in the closet where you put your clothes and how you fold your t-shirts or whatever it is in your drawers and where you put your plates and your silverware and your, you know, crystal and all that kind of stuff in the kitchen and dining area and how everything is clean and in its place. That's order. And that's physical order. And you notice that when things are orderly, there is a sense of quiet. There's a sense of peace. There's a sense of of a continuity. There is a sense of security. For some people, it's a pleasure to kind of have everything in order. Other people have a different relationship with their order. It can be more chaotic. Very often, creative people have difficulty with establishing serenity and order in their physical environment. Because in that chaos is incredible creativity. You came into life completely and totally creative. There were no limits to it. No, except for your incapacity to function physically, you know, when you're a baby. But you were able to create mentally, emotionally. And as you matured and as you grew up, you're able to create in the physical plane as well. You created your order. Now along the way, part of the growth process, part of your path, is to break that order and restructure to a higher order. Because the order that you had when you're 4 is not the order that you need when you're 12. You shift your order, you shift your priorities, you shift your preferences. You align yourself to what is very important at that time, depending on your maturity level. In your 20s, your order changes again. And throughout your life, you will find one way or another to break down the limiting order to allow yourself to construct freer and freer constructs of reality. You expand your sense of self. You expand your sense of self-definition. And every time you do, it breaks down the limiting order that you had. Now, you're not terribly aware of this process in your day-to-day level. When you grow in increments, when you, discovered something, and you put it in there, and you start gradually shifting and so on. But there are times in your life when it's either self-directed to break out of a limiting place so that you can grow more, or simply that you've outgrown the order that you have or that you are in, or that you need to reprioritize your life in some way, you will create a crisis. Crisis is a threat of danger to that established and very familiar sense of order. It is a threat to the priorities as you have held them. And as we said before, a lot of your order comes from the responses that you get from other people. And you find that if you act and do and think and feel in certain ways, you get more positive reactions from outside, from other people, from circumstances, from your employers, whoever it is. And when you are in crisis, external change seems to precipitate it. There's a danger of something that you have relied upon consistently, that you have prioritized, even in your adjustments to your woundings, to your pain, to things that went awry. These adjustments, part of your sense of order, resistances, ways that you handle yourself in your day, how you handle your motivation, how you handle your feelings. Sometimes you shut yourself down, and that's a priority. Sometimes you hide yourself, and that's a priority. And very often, that's exactly where crisis will hit. Some external changes, or in your body, for example, a health crisis, or a crisis in relationship where you lose something, lose someone, lose trust in a relationship. Very often, crisis threatens loss, not just loss of order in all its sense of security and continuum. It can turn it upside down. But it also threatens your image of yourself. It threatens everything that you hold to be a place of safety and refuge in all your compensations, in all your internal, emotional, psychological structures, in all the hiding that you can do. It forces you, in a way, to become more present, to become more real, so that you can act, so that you can respond, and so that you can find ways to move into a greater sense of self, a greater sense of security. But you are not trained on how to handle a crisis. Like all your emotions, it is just assumed that you just are on your own pretty much. You're just, in a sense, thrown into the water and expected to swim. And sometimes that's what a crisis is. It throws you into the water and you have to learn to swim right away to survive. Some people use crises that stimulate their fear of loss of survival. It can go that deep. Others take crises and stretch it out over a long period of time. So they go through months of intense personal shifting and changing, but it doesn't look like your external world is falling apart. You may feel you're falling apart a bit inside, but you can still function. Some people use crises on a regular basis to enable themselves to get back to the chaos. Now, none of you really want to go into the chaos. It feels pretty scary in there. It's the unknown. It's the darkness. The chaos that's happened on this planet, particularly the economic chaos. You can feel lost. You can feel floundering. You can feel a whole tremendous sense of disorientation. Who am I? What do I do now? Where do I go? What actions do I need to take? What are my reference points? How do I orient myself? Chaos brings disorder for a very powerful and important reason, because it is through chaos that you create something new. You must go there. Crisis takes you to chaos so that you can create anew, so that you can expand and so that you can grow. But once you get your cozy little order set up and everything all under control, or you think, there's a tremendous resistance to change. Sometimes that resistance builds up and builds up and builds up, and then you need some kind of really big sledgehammer to come in and bust it so that you can go into the chaos and recreate a reality, a life that is more congruent and more consistent with who you really, truly are, and with your mission. Now, we have talked about mission before. Your personal mission is that of self-realization, to recognize who you are, that the divine light being, to take your role in this planet, on this earth, as a reality creator. And from there, in your power, in your strength, in your love, free to be yourself, you can freely choose to participate in the consciousness, in the creation of the great shift, of the great change, the reason that you're here. All these little increments along the way, depending on how much you resist, will be more intense as crises, or just strung out crises, which is a period of personal intense change. The way people see crises normally is that it comes to them from the outside. It comes from someone else. It comes from the environment. It comes from losing a job or losing a relationship. It can come with the death of a loved one, a health crisis that sabotages your capacity to achieve. Some people have crises that force them to change their life path. And in essence, when you discover the spiritual path, notice what a crisis that was, what that did, the impact of that on your daily life. It was huge. It changed everything. Your perceptions changed. Your perspective changed. Your orientation changed. Your image of yourself changed. Your evaluation of your reality, your whole environment, and everything that went on in it changed. To come into alignment with this new idea. This process happens many, many times throughout your life. If you can come to terms with the chaos, you can create a better order. You may not be feeling very willing to do it in the moment and in the times of crisis, in that time of panic and disorder and chaos and confusion. You fall into the emptiness, into the nothing, into the space of the unknown, in the realm of all possibility. And your challenge, the challenge of your crisis, is for you to make the choices and take the actions to reorient yourself, to align yourself to a higher part of you, the higher sense of yourself. Chaos is not devastating. It's easy to feel lost there. But it is not a devastating place. In fact, it is very natural to you. It is like your home space. It is like the bottom line. It is always present. It is always there. In fact, the idea that you are safe and secure in your sense of order is an illusion. Part of the illusion of that physical plane you have chosen to participate in. That chaos is there. You need to learn how to work with it in a crisis. A crisis is more than just change. It is a self-directed change, directed from your unconscious mind, directed from your higher self, so that you stay on your journey, your spiritual journey. You can feel very alone in a crisis. You can respond to a crisis in very immature ways. Or you can respond to a crisis from your true adult self. So as you can imagine, let's look at how not to respond to a crisis, all right? Mm-hmm. Within you, as we've talked before, are several sub-personalities, you might call them. Parts of you that are always there. Your inner child self. The child has a partner. The child does a dance with the internal parent. We have discussed their roles in your life. There is a dark side to them, a negative side, a limiting side to the inner child. The dark side to the internal parent. And when you are falling into this pair, in a crisis, you will feel helpless, hopeless, in despair. You won't know what to do. The child will seek to find someone else to take care of them. You know, children don't feel that they're capable or competent to take care of themselves. They feel dependent. They feel unable to be an adult. So they seek to find somebody. It can be a person. It can be a group. It can be the government. But they seek to find someone to take care of them. It could be a hotline even. Please, take care of me. Please calm me down. Please love me. Please nurture me. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. I can't do anything. And the internal parent, always trying to find the proper thing to do, the negative side, the dark side of the parent, will judge and criticize and repeat the story about you in a crisis, about how you've fallen apart before and how you can't ever seem to get your life together. And how you need this and how you need that. And oh, what's going to happen? You're not going to survive. You better find somebody to take care of you. You better do something. So that's the child and the parent. And very often there's a lot of self-pity with that too. So if you find yourself falling into self-pity, feeling so sorry for yourself, feeling so alone, so separated and sorry for yourself. That's a child. Because a child is wanting the internal parent or somebody to play the role of parent to come and say, there, there, it's all going to be okay, don't worry. Here, let me hold you. Cry on my shoulder. Now, that will come up in a crisis. Because every time you have a crisis, your inner child and your internal parent will come and put their 2 cents in. Don't deny them. Just be aware of them. Don't let yourself get stuck in self-pity, which is a device by which you can numb out those painful, scary feelings. Because when you go there, you go absolutely inert. You're frozen. You can't do very much in a crisis when you're frozen. You can't reevaluate order and create something freeing for yourself. Then also coming in is the adolescent. The dark side of the adolescent and the adolescent's partner, the social ego. Here's where you feel embarrassment. Oh, I'm in a crisis. How embarrassing. By now, with all the things that I've done, I should not have to go through a crisis. I shouldn't have to deal with this. There's something really wrong with me. You can shame yourself. The ego will tell you that you're worthless, that nobody likes you, that you're stupid, that you look terrible, and that's why nobody likes you. Or they'll flip side on the reverse and tell you how important and how phenomenal you are and that nobody can see that. The adolescent will, of course, blame somebody else for your crisis. Oh, no. Oh, no, it came from outside of me. It's not something I did. It's something they are doing to me. And I'm pissed. I'm angry about it. It's their fault. That person shouldn't have gone and left me. That person shouldn't have done this to me. Adolescent takes it very, very personally. Adolescent and ego work together very closely to make sure that you take everything personally. It's about me. They're doing it to me. They're acting like that to punish me. And what does the adolescent like to do? But fantasize ways of getting even, having revenge. If somebody does it to them. The adolescent also can say, well, since it's not anything that I can do, it's all about them and what they think of me and what's going on, and I lost this job, you know, I just spoke the truth. They shouldn't have fired me. That's not fair. Whatever the adolescent analysis is, the rationale of it, it rationales tremendous resistance, and the adolescent can get very resistant and just veg. I'll just sit here in front of the TV until I come up with something. Until something changes. I'll just watch TV. I'll escape. I'll just drink something. I'll get stoned. I'll just numb out in some kind of way. I'll drink a lot of booze, whatever it is. And I'll just veg in front of the TV. And I'll watch other people having problems. There. I'm not alone. The rest of the world sucks too. This is misery. We're all in it together. This is a terrible, sucky place to be. This physical plane. Ugh. Mm. I shouldn't be here in the first place. Why do I have to be physical in the first place? Damn it. There are all these mean people out there, and they do all horrible things to people. And all sorts of very bizarre fantasies. Outrage, righteousness, tremendous righteous anger, rationalities, some of them very bizarre indeed. You know, you have spokespeople. You have certain spokespeople that are on the radio or TV, and whose favorite thing to do is to outrage people. Tell people how bad it is. Make up all sorts of things. Well, they're doing it to us. And we're the victims of it. And we've got to rise up. And we've got to fight. And we've got to... A lot of violence and fighting. But if you're in the ego enough, and the adolescent enough, in the dark side of them, you can think about suicide, about death. Ah, sweet repose of death. All these horrible problems, all this turbulence in my emotions, all this pain could end. And indeed, that's why during adolescence, as a general aspect, but there are more suicides than at other times in the life. Unless the crisis comes really heavy at other times in the life and the person goes into adolescent. Sometimes a really vulnerable person will actually seriously think about death. But you remember when you were an adolescent yourself, how you thought about death anyway, life and death, the intensity, the black and white of it, the blackness of death, the whiteness of life. Everything was intense. So if you're in your adolescent place, you're going to get into intensity. Everything's going to be wrought overwrought, overemphasized, overwhelmingly intense, which will justify any kind of behavior on your part, especially just sitting and vegging in front of the TV. And then the young adult. The young adult thinks that they know the way the world should work, and damn it, this crisis is not right. It just shouldn't be like this. It should be something else. It should work like this. Change should be easier. Everything should work more harmoniously. And its partner, the slave driver. The slave driver is going to shame you and guilt you to get up. Push, drive, push, drive. Come on, come on. Up, up, up. Lazy you, lazy you. You got to get going. You got to get going. You got to do it. And what's a young adult going to do? The young adult is going to fantasize, well, maybe I'll win the lottery. That'll take care of it. The young adult can get lost, will go out of the present moment as much as possible, will escape into fantasy about how it will be in the future once everything is resolved. Now, this would really work well for you. You would have an idea about your future and where you're going if you didn't have the dark spin of the young adult with all their opinions about how the world should work, which are totally screwy. The world doesn't work the way the young adult thinks it does. Now, there are positives to these selves, too. And if you are in a crisis, it's easy to get into battle with the negatives and forget to use the positive sides of these same six subpersonalities, these same three pairs. These are archetypal energies that you take with you throughout your life. You do not want to get rid of the child or the adolescent or the young adult. You don't want to get rid of the parent. You don't want to get rid of the ego. You need a positive ego to function. Now, when we talk about the slave driver, you think, oh, yeah, now that you got to get rid of. No, you can retire it. But there's a positive side to the slave driver. It's called motivation and passion. So we'd say the true motivator would be the positive side of the slave driver. Sometimes people go through so many crises that they feel like they have to give up their true motivation. And they keep going back trying to solve the inner child's dilemma and freak out over the loss, potential loss of survival. Anytime you have a threat to your order, it does feel a threat to your survival. And so therefore you can take a crisis, even if it's a big crisis, or even a little crisis, and you can blow it out of proportion because it looks like a threat to your survival. So what can the child, the positive child, do? The positive child is the one who asks for help. The positive internal parent is the one who says, okay, let's sit down and let's really look at how things are. Okay, let's take stock of things. Let's see what resources we've got, what is required and what other people are requiring and what we've got to do. And let's just look at the circumstances, not putting a spin on it particularly. It's just like evaluate what it is and see what is really necessary to do. It's good to have the inner child, the positive one, and the internal parent, the positive one. They can function positively for you in a crisis. And the adolescent, the positive of the adolescent? The adolescent likes nothing better than to unravel an interesting mystery. It is intrigued. If you can bring the internal positive adolescent self into your conscious awareness, you can say, wow, this crisis, a breakdown of an old order, moving into chaos, it's a time of creating something new, examining possibility. Let me understand what's going on. What is the real trigger? What is the real purpose? What is the use of this crisis? And let me examine that. Let me see if I can unfold a mystery here and figure out what's going on, to understand it, to explore it, from conceptual, emotional, psychological, spiritual perspectives. The positive ego is the one that holds your sense of boundary. Your ego is extremely necessary to have a sense of order in your life. The trouble is that the negative ego generally holds you to tighter boundaries than who you naturally are growing into. So a positive ego would be one who holds yourself to a boundary of positive beliefs, a boundary of positive actions, a boundary of positive self-image and dreams and visions, and an alignment with your intrinsic nature, with yourself. It enables that positive adolescent to explore the adventure that is part of that possibility of the chaos that comes in the time of crisis. The young adult in times of crisis. The young adult looks at what resources are available in the environment. The young adult has a great imagination. If the young adult is not in la-la land, in fantasy, the positive side of the young adult is that can dream a new you, a new possibilities and potentials, can go and work with that to create on an adult level. They have the imagination. They have the dreaming part of you. So beautifully done. So imaginatively done. You can tap into that to lift out of the chaos onto a new direction. And with the positive slave driver, which is the true motivation, these dreams and these visions aligned in true motivation, in alignment with who you are, in alignment, your dream in alignment with you, with your spiritual mission, personal and global mission, your participation in this reality, the creation of a new reality for yourself, can then take place. So you can see that when the crisis comes, regardless whether it's a smaller crisis or a very huge crisis, creating tremendous stress, you also have, besides the danger of the loss of the old order, incredible opportunity to create a new, freer, more expanded sense of order. And throughout your life, as long as you're on the physical plane, you're going to break down old order and create freer, more expanded order. It's like you bust the old box and you create a new, bigger one that you feel free to move within. Now, it's very tempting when you are in the young adult imagining and fantasizing and dreaming, it's tempting to get those mixed up. So what we're going to focus on today is on getting the internal change aligned up. Because when you get your new sense of internal order, the external world starts to make more sense again. You start to see what you can do and make choices, even though you don't have all the information in. A lot of people wait, well, I don't know how to make this choice because I don't have all the information in. I'm not in touch with my motivation. I'm not in touch with my positive parent who sees all the, you know, what's going on. I'm not connected in there yet, so I can't make a decision. I can't take any action until I get more information, until I'm really sure, absolutely sure and certain that this is a way to go. And if you fall into that trap, you're going to fall into the limited or the dark ego. It says, you've got to be sure and absolutely certain of your boundaries. In other words, the walls of your box. And then you'll know what to do. Well, when you're creating a new box, it's not useful to sit within the walls of the old box because thinking within the old box is not going to give you the ideas of what you need to do in the new one. What is it they said that a problem cannot be solved with the level of thinking that created the problem? You have to think on a higher level to find an answer to a problem, to find solutions. And in order to get that higher level, you must enter the chaos. So today, we're going to take you consciously, deliberately, into the chaos and familiarize you with it. So that when your crisis comes, or if you're happen to be in one now, you can make the shift. You can make the reorientation. And you can create the new sense of internal order, the priorities, the preferences, the values. And from there, then you can make good choices of action. There is no perfect action. There is only a sense of responding as the adult. The adult is the synergy of these six selves, plus a dash of the divine that is really essentially who you are. So you integrate these selves and they form a synergistic energy working positively together. And you connect with the divine. And the way out the other side of the chaos into your greater future becomes revealed. So how is adult going to respond? Well, first of all, very often when you go into crisis, the first ones to respond are the child and the adolescent. The immature selves will respond right away. Take note of this. Do not buy into it as real. The first step of being an adult is to distinguish the whole of you, which is the synergy of these positive selves, with the child, adolescent, young adult, and their partner's immaturity, to recognize that that is just them acting out. What does the child do first? Cry. Right? Children cry. Well, sometimes little boys learned, you've got to be a man. You can't cry. And they stuff it in themselves. And they shut down in shame and hang their head. But what is your first choice? First, thing come up is the child. Who's freaking out the most over the crisis? The child. And you must recognize, oh, this is the child self. This is not me, the adult. You must distinguish the adult from the child. At the moment, it may seem very difficult. If you suddenly, you're there, boo-hoo, or you're just going there into shock and shame. Oh, this is the child. This is a child hanging its head in shame. This is a child crying in despair and self-pity. Oh, as soon as you're aware of that, you're in the adult. And as soon as you're in the adult, soon as you're separate, soon as you can identify that, you have that distinction. You're in your power. Now, sometimes when people do this process and they recognize, oh my gosh, there's the child, they go into judgment about it. I should not be here. Any shoulds or any oughts are the critical parent, the negative parent. That will automatically come up with the child if the negative child or the dark side of the child is emoting. So don't do that. Don't go there either. You don't judge yourself. Oh, I should have got it. Oh, stupid me. I didn't get it. Here I went and cried and I was in the child and I didn't seem to get out of it and so on. Don't go there. How cruel that is to you, the light being that you are. That's acting as if you are still the child, beating yourself up just because you don't have a parent, a dysfunctional parent maybe beating you up. You'll do it yourself. Don't. Stop. Oh, that's the internal parent, the critical judging parent. Okay, I'm the adult. Then when you feel the resistance, oh, all I want to do is just veg. Let's turn on the TV. Let's play some computer games. Let's just stay in bed all day. Sometimes it's really nurturing to do that. But if you do it excessively, you need to wake up and say, okay, adult. Now, this does not mean that you shut down the child or and shut up the parent or shut down the adolescent or shut up the ego who's going to put some kind of nasty spin on it, some twist. No, you listen to them. First of all, you distinguish yourself as the adult. You take your power back. Then you have compassion and love for those internal selves because they're freaking out. Their boxes are really, really small. And they're busted out of the box and they're in the chaos and they don't know what to do because they're powerless. You're the one with the power. You can do something, not them. That's the first thing you've got to do, is to become aware, come present, and realize you are not that. And to have compassion and sit with it. And let the child emote. Let it come out. Be present with it. Love the child. Love the parent. Love them all. Just, that neutralizes their damage on you. Because essentially, underneath it all, what is it that you need the most? Is love. And what is it that establishes immaturity versus maturity? In the immature, you don't know that you are love. You don't know that you are connected to the divine and to an infinite source of love. You don't know that. You feel separate from the love and you're needing it and you're looking for it in some way through financial success, through a love relationship, through security of some sort. So when you're the adult, you take on the mantle of the loving one, to love them. And if you hear a voice inside saying, well, yeah, I'm taking care of the child and the parent and the adolescent and the young adult and the ego and the positive motivation and slave driver and all that. Yeah, yeah, I get that, Galexis. But then what about me? That's probably young adult and adolescent again. There will come a point, if you love them, if you let them wail, let them express, let them do whatever they need to do, there'll come a point where it's done. They've gotten it out. They've gotten it off their chest. And it may take a few minutes. It may take a few hours. It may take a few days to get through it all. Don't rush this. Be present. This is part of the chaos. So many people are in such a hurry to get out of the chaos. Come on, come on. We got to get to a new sense of order right away, right away. No, that's a slave driver. Always putting time pressure on you. You're late, you're late, you're behind, you're behind. Look at everybody else your age. You're behind. Hurry up. You've got to be more successful. You got to whip that relationship into shape. Or you got to get one. Or you got to do this. You got to get that form and this manifestation and that manifestation. You got to do this and this and this and this. Pressure, pressure, pressure. Young adult and slave driver. So you have to pause. You have to stop. You have to go into no time, which is the eternal now. We're taking you into an adventure into the eternal now. And that's your pivot point. That's the place where you turn the dark side of these internal selves into the light sides. When you receive the love, the light, the power as part of who you are, acknowledging it, and then constructively in your power and your love and your freedom of choice, you feel safe. You feel safe. Safety exists within the chaos. But you can't go there until the dark voices have been heard, listened to, understood, appreciated. Until you reach that point, that still point, where you realize, it's up to me. And that's not a negative thing. It's up to me to bring in the light, the love, to receive from my helper friends, my spirit helpers, to receive from greater aspects of myself a vision of who I am becoming. To have a future. To create a new future. To dream. To unravel the mystery. To receive that assistance that is there. And then you emerge out of the chaos into your own light. Now, admittedly, when you do this process, you may not yet be at a place to take actions in the world of form, in the illusion, into the manifestations on the physical plane yet. But you'll be reoriented and you'll be beginning to create a new sense of order that will serve you through the next phases of your life. But it will bring you out of the crisis energetically, to be able to tap the resources, the potentials and the possibilities of the chaos in an empowered way. And from there you can make choices on this new foundation, this new orientation, this new self, this new way. That makes sense. Everything then makes sense again. Not something you can analyze and write down on a notepad and outline out. No, it's not going to be linear. But it's going to make sense in your heart. It's going to make sense in your gut level. You're going to have a sense of knowing, a way of reading the messages, the omens, the portents, the possibilities, to know what's in alignment with you, where you need to go, where you want to go, and to step into that expanded place. That's the process. And from that expanded place, you will take the appropriate actions. Now be aware that at any step of this process, the immature selves could show up again. In other words, here you're starting to take action and so on, and it doesn't look like the action's working right. You may have an inner voice in there saying, you should be perfect. It should be, you should do the exact right thing. Don't make a mistake. You got to laugh about that one. There is no perfect action, but there is a certain perfection in all that is. Don't confuse the two. That's the adolescent. The adolescent loves perfection. Don't fall for those traps. Don't fall for ego traps about, oh, I'm going to get through this crisis and I'm going to be the inspiration for millions of people. Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah, yeah, compare yourself to other people. Right, right. That really helps. That's the way you got those limiting structures in the first place. So always be aware that there'll be hints of the immature selves. Every time you step outside their realm of influence, they'll panic. They're not used to functioning on the greater level. So every time you grow, they freak out. It's just the way it is. If you don't take it personally, you can do it with so much elegance and grace. The adolescent takes everything personally. It's because I'm such a screw up. It's because they're after me. And we'll find all the because that will end up just being limiting beliefs wrapped into stories of how you can't get anywhere. And so that's the excuse for you to just sit home and watch TV. Adolescence got it all wrapped up. There you go. And it can come in any moment. When you are sit with your inner voices, sit with those inner selves, immature selves, freaking out, you love them, take care of them, but you sit with the emotions. You don't try to process the emotions. You don't try to analyze the emotions. Where do they all come from? You can do that anytime. You're so smart. You've got all sorts of analysis, but be aware when you start to analyze and figure everything out, the whys, why and because and blah, 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 as soon as you get into those tracks of thought, you can nail yourself into a box. A limiting box. So when you sit with the feelings, the thoughts, the beliefs, and all those kinds of things, you must just be with it. This is about being. You are going to hit and touch a great realm, a great expanse of being that exists underneath all of the flotsam and jetsam of all this crap that's running around and all the craziness. The crazy part of the chaos, but underneath it, it is a void, is the deep, is stillness. There's a freedom there, a peace. And you can go there. But you just have to be there. It's not a place, thing you do. It's not a place you go to. You just be there. We're going to take you on a meditation in a little while to that place of stillness, that place of being. So much you can do, but it's time in a sense just to be. And when that happens, the pain, the intensity, the craziness of the chaos fades because you're into the oneness. The crisis then becomes a portal of freedom, of the new, of more, of greater things for you. But you're beyond all identification when you be. Because you see, you are nothing. Now, if we say that, you're nothing, that's seen as a judgment, yes? That's really not nice of you to say that. You're ridiculing me. You're shaming me. No, but you see, you're more, so, so much, infinitely more than anything. You're so much more than any thought or feeling or identification. You are not form. There is an all-abiding, endless foundation of formlessness, of emptiness, that in there is the divine love. And that is where you truly, all the time, live, just not always consciously. People who touch in on it consciously have enlightenment, satori, transcendent visualization. People travel to India for it, sit at gurus' feet, go through many initiations for it. And it is within you all the time. And that's what all the gurus say, too. And everybody go, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what they always say. But I know that when I sit with a guru, boy, do I feel more of this fullness, more of this oneness, more of this light. Oh, gosh, I'm just going to come and drink in. When you go to India and sit at the feet of a guru, it's getting darshan, the sight of a realized one. That when you sit in their presence, you can feel the love, the light, the power, the incredibleness, the spiritual dimensionality of that one. Essentially, the role of the student or disciple and the guru is that eventually the disciple discovers, oh, I am that. I and the guru are one. And the guru is not the body. The guru is this eternal, all-abiding oneness of divine love. It's the being. It's time to utilize the resource of your very being to enable you to heal a crisis, to come through on the other side as a beautiful light being that you are. And that when you take on your identifications again of your name and your beliefs and so on, you can then consciously and deliberately choose these identifications to be greater and more freeing and more loving and more empowering and safer. And we're going to get into safety in the second part of this day. So we're going to take a break now. I'm going to take a, 15 minutes? 10-minute break. I'm going to take a 10-minute break. And after this break, we will take your questions. So think up some juicy questions for us, all right? Mm-hmm. All right, so later. Farewell.